Stevie Wonder with Higher Ground, the title track of his 1973 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And a very interesting development from yesterday. We got a great deal of reaction and feedback. And it was because of the topic, I guess. People wanted to contribute. We ran out of time. We had so many people in queue. But also, I got a lot of feedback via email about people wanting to talk a bit about the subject and to contribute their thoughts. Yesterday's discussion, as you may recall, was about how we cope with day-to-day stresses and continue, literally, as Stevie Wonder says in his song, how do we continue to head toward higher ground personally and as part of a community of people wanting to do their part to take an active role in promoting a better society, but of course, predicated on the idea of being better ourselves, getting ourselves to a point where we feel that we are fulfilling what some may call as a mission here on the planet. How do we do that? How do we not just lose ourselves? And what do we do to keep ourselves together and on track? And that was part of the whole idea, the bigger picture of what we talk very often about, which is commitment to activism. But it really starts with a commitment to self-actualization, self-realization. So we got quite a bit of response, and it indicates to me that we should make some room today to continue that discussion and to accommodate calls that we could not accommodate yesterday. So we'll do that. But before we get to those calls, a very interesting development in Congress, and that is by Bernie Sanders, who has put forward what the mayor of San Juan is calling a very comprehensive approach to helping to rebuild Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Sanders put forward a bill today titled the Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands Equitable Rebuild Act of 2017. It's a long title, but that's the title. It would help to rebuild and it would help to restore Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And he places a price tag of $146 billion on the rebuild effort. So we will see where that goes. It comes up for initial debate on December the 8th. And, of course, we hope that there would be sufficient support for this bill, because these areas have been devastated, as you know. And the most recent devastation of the storm, compounding devastation that they had been living with for a long time, with infrastructure and many institutions and many sectors of their respective economies falling apart from neglect. These are U.S. territories, and so this is a call to action, as Senator Sanders has indicated, that people should move affirmatively now to get to the idea of rebuilding and get to the process of reconstruction. So that's the short end of it. $146 billion he's calling for to be allocated to rebuilding the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, to modernize the infrastructure, and to begin the process of getting these two islands, well, not two islands, the Virgin Islands is the number of islands, but to get these islands back on their feet. I don't know how it would go, but that's really the challenge now. The Democrats have something to push for against the reluctant and recalcitrant Trump administration. We will see where things go. So our eyes are peeled. We'll get into the details probably tomorrow or another day, but it is sufficient to know that there is activity. As you know, Senator Sanders had gone down to Puerto Rico very recently to see for himself what was happening on the ground, and apparently upon return got very much involved in putting together this bill. Supposedly, the Democratic leadership endorses this bill, but we will see. You know, you can't tell anything these days. Everything has, an inside track that we don't know anything about, and so we'll wait and see. So coming back to this question from yesterday, by the way, the number to call is 888-874-4888. And especially those of you who didn't have a chance to say anything, but if you wish also to add to what you said yesterday, this is the time to do it. We are always looking outward more than we look inward. And so we really don't pay attention to what is called for most of the time, and that is that we have to take care of ourselves. We have to put ourselves together. And we should avoid the tendency to look outside of ourselves and look at what the world is doing. And we talk about it all the time. We talk about what's going on in the world, what's happening outside of us. Well, fine. My question is, what's happening inside of us? And how are we preparing ourselves, not just to be, comfortable, but to have a real palpable feeling and knowledge that we're trying to get it together. We're trying to put ourselves together so that we can be better at serving. We can be better at serving others. I know it's something I have observed over the years, where people who are helping people are themselves in need of help. And the helping of people, as they see it, is really a kind of avoidance of the real problem or the real challenge, which is help yourself. Help yourself. And then you can be so much more helpful to others. I'm not in any way castigating anybody. We are who we are. We experience what we're experiencing. And we have so many ways that we are accustomed to dealing with things. I'm saying take some time and be introspective. And do a little bit of inventory about where your dings are. You know, we get dinged all the time. And it takes a while before we understand that we've been carrying this baggage in some cases for years. Hurts and denials and pain and all this other kind of stuff. And we expiate these demons that have been hounding us by saying, okay, I'm involved in such and such activity. But we know at some point we have to admit part of why we are activists is that we are avoiding the internal work. That we shove off to the side, we deny that we are hurting. We deny that we feel incomplete. We deny that we have unresolved issues that are with us every day. And so we substitute the time that we should be spending in dealing with these very, very important issues, and we lay them to the side, only to find out that at some point, when you least expect it, it's right there in front of you and you can't avoid it. And sometimes it's too late to do anything about it. So I'm saying that because it is so clear that we have, as a community, we have so much work to do. In all these levels, we have so much work to do. And some people, I nominate myself as an example. For years, I paid attention to everything except me. And there came a time you can't avoid it. I worked for 19 years without a sick day or vacation. And when I left the newspaper that I started, it took about 8 to 11 people to do the job I did all by myself. I didn't think about it. I just did my work. And it was not the best thing to do. I rationalized it that if I didn't do it, it wouldn't get done. And to a large extent, yes, it was true. It's not that it wouldn't get done. It wouldn't get done properly, or wouldn't get done to my standard and all this other kind of stuff, which speaks to a whole other set of issues. But that is why I trained people. You have to share what you know. You have to bring people along. And it has broader implications because I know a lot of people like me. And then one day, they drop dead, and life goes on. Somehow people manage. So it is not that any one of us is actually indispensable. We think so. It is that we haven't come to a point yet of understanding and accepting that we too deserve care. We deserve peace of mind. We deserve very small, it may be very small to some people, but we deserve some degree of restfulness, psychological and emotional restfulness and comfort. We deserve to be happy, all of us. And it does take concentrated time to think about this. It can't be, you know, a knee-jerk reaction. It has to be purposeful time that you set aside to think about this, which is another way of saying you have, many of us, we forego this duty to ourselves, thinking that it's the wrong thing to actually take care of yourself. And for the specific purpose of being better at serving others. Right? So this is the bedrock, I think, of the kind of work that we have to do with ourselves. And not feeling guilty about it or ashamed of it or in any way embarrassed about it. This is restorative work that you have to do in order to be better to serve others. So the question I posed yesterday was, in what ways are we preparing ourselves to do just that? What are we doing now to just hold ourselves together? Even as we, you know, we delay this necessary job of taking care of ourselves. Why? Because many of us will be in leadership roles, whether they are given or whether you have to assume them out of necessity. You're in leadership roles in your families and friends and neighbors in your workplace. It would be so good, and this is why people like this stand out, when automatically people can see leadership in you, and then you can feel more natural in that capacity, that you're helping. Leadership doesn't mean that you're in charge. Leadership means that you also might be part of a team that is trying to accomplish something. You're exercising leadership there. So leadership is going to be something we have to be comfortable with. We are leaders. And I don't mean it, as I said before, I don't mean this in the typical American sense of dominating any effort, but leadership in the sense that you hold your own, whether you are piloting a project or an issue, or whether you are part of a community of people striving to achieve something. That is leadership too. Leadership also implies that you're a great follower, but a smart one. People who've been following people for years, and they have no sense of accomplishment. And that's because we're not evaluating those efforts and those people. We're all in the same boat. We are deferring this necessary piece of work. And in a sense, I think it is a factor in why, in so many ways, we are dissipated, easily conquered, because this assertion of leadership is a false one in many cases, because we don't feel good about ourselves as leaders. We don't feel comfortable there in that position. So while we present to the world a veneer that we are solid, we are leaders, we actually are not. We can be cracked at any time. So what are your thoughts, those of you who didn't get in yesterday, those of you who did and would like to add something more, because we'll move on to other things tomorrow. And I just wanted to afford people the opportunity, because yesterday was really tight on time. And as you know, I like the idea of giving people space to say what they have to say. We're living in a very trying time, but every time has been a trying time, all down the line, for people who are struggling. It's always a trying time. And so you have to have a sense of, you know, you're kind of solid and you're okay in this respect. I refer here to my mother, now deceased, and a very strange thing that she would do every morning, before the day dawned. She would be up, her head would be covered with some kind of a veil or something. We used to call them mantillas, you know, going to church. Her head had to be covered. And we knew she was up because we would smell incense burning. And she very quietly would go from room to room where her children were asleep. At least we had to pretend we were. And she would pray over us every single morning. She would pray that we would have a good day at school, but most importantly, she would pray that we would be safe and come back to her in the evening safely. And that, she would pray some extra prayers, but that generally was what she did every single morning. And I don't know that we thought much about it. Actually, it was just mom doing her thing. And then from that, she would proceed to the kitchen and get busy making breakfast for her family and so forth. But that was her ritual. And it took me years to discover that it wasn't just for us that she was praying. She was reinforcing herself spiritually, girding herself spiritually to be in the role of mother, of wife, of businesswoman. You know, all those roles. These were the things that she did to affirm herself. It took me years to figure that out. But that ritual, I came to recognize, was her way of getting grounded. And so she could proceed through the day, but from a position of calm and peace. See? Interesting. So it took me a long time. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
I had some comment about the Puerto Rico situation. Is that all right if I speak on that?
Sure.
I just think that maybe the what Bernie wants to do with the 140 something billion dollars would be better spent to relocate the people from Puerto Rico to the United States and get them places settled in here, because in 10 months hurricane season is starting again and the same thing could happen all over again. So it doesn't make much sense. I mean, there's 3 million people in Puerto Rico, right?
Yes.
I understand they like to stay on that island, but I'm sure the Haitian people would love to be in the position that the Puerto Rican people are in, that they could come to the United States whenever they want to come. There's millions of people that would like to come to the United States that can't come to the United States because they're not a citizen. So I just think that it's that this hurricane thing is not going to cease. It's going to be worse probably in the next season. And it seems that the money would be wasted because the same thing could happen again.
Of course the same thing could happen again. It's very possible also that the same thing has happened over and over again way before there were people in Puerto Rico. So the other thing is we have to respect, or we should respect, the rights of individuals to decide what they want to do. What many of them want to do is to stay right where they are, and they're entitled to do that. Thirdly, Puerto Ricans, I must remind you, are Americans. And so the idea of coming to the United States, they are already there. They're Americans. And so right. They are entitled to the same relief and the commitment of the government to provide services that don't normally fall upon individual citizens to provide, such as navigable roads and infrastructure. These are things that individual citizens do not do. That's why they pay taxes. So they're looking for, they didn't cause the hurricane to happen, but it did, and the United States has an obligation, as it did in New Orleans, as it did in Texas, as it does anywhere where you see natural disasters occurring. The country is obligated to provide relief, to do those things that the citizens can't themselves do. And we should see this as a way, as a matter of fact, as a way of expressing, as a chief executive of the United States, expressing what making America great again is all about. It's about coming to the assistance and aid of people, Americans, who as a group have been put asunder by Mother Nature. And this president has failed utterly and continues to fail utterly at that task.
I understand that, but I mean, Gary Null lives in Naples, Florida, and he's considering, does it make any sense to stay there? Because the same thing can happen again next year to his property again. So he might be having to consider moving out of the state of Florida, which I might have to consider also.
So well, there are people in different positions to consider all kinds of things. But when you take a look at the history of these islands, which essentially were quite self-sustaining, despite hurricanes and whatnot, they were self-sustaining. So, and that means that for many, there is an emotional connection. Their fathers and mothers and grandparents and great-grandparents going back quite a while, many of them can trace their belonging, as it were, to Puerto Rico. And that's acceptable. The thing is, we are making all kinds of reasons for why this government has not yet behaved as if these were citizens of the country. Puerto Ricans died in large numbers in America's wars, and they were of great service to this country in so many ways, and they want to stay where they are, irrespective of the possibility that you could have another storm. There may have been thousands of storms before we actually recorded history. But here they are. This is what they want. What do you suggest? Uprooting them from what they know? It would be like becoming refugees, and they don't want that. They're Americans. In Florida, when the storm hit, in lower Florida, in the Keys were devastated. And within a matter of weeks, the Keys essentially were restored. Like South Beach suffered lots of damage from flooding. It no longer is, and life goes on. So there isn't anything extraordinary here. It is that this is the will of the people. The government knows that it had neglected Puerto Rico for decades, which is why the infrastructure has gone to hell. It would not tolerate this or anything like this on the mainland. Do you think Donald Trump will tolerate poor infrastructure at Mar-a-Lago, where he goes to play golf? No. He deserves better than that. So do Puerto Ricans. They deserve better than that.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. I mean, if we could send helicopters and all kinds of military stuff all the way to Vietnam all those years and spend all that money getting all these equipment over there to Vietnam so we could kill people, we could have done the same thing here to help the people out in Puerto Rico and get them water and get them food and get them everything they need. I agree with all of that, and I think that that's important. That should have been done, and it's a disgrace that it wasn't done. But at the same time, I think instead of spending money to rebuild everything that might happen, we have to think of the worst scenarios now. And maybe it's better to spend the hundred and something billions of dollars to help the people to come here and get them places to live so that they'll be on the mainland, because it's easier to recover from a bad hurricane on the mainland than it is to try to help people that are on islands. I think all the islands need to be evacuated now that global warming is getting the way it is. And we have to, you know, stop being in denial and start caring more about the people that are going to be stuck on these, the Haitian people that have been dealing with this for 8 years now, still living in little shanty shacks.
I understand where you're going, but I have to caution you that you may need to readjust the mirror here. A lot of the suffering is not so much because of the storm. The storm did its thing. We can't deny that. The suffering comes in when you have the government involved, you have one of the best ways, which they did not yet use, is to involve the people. Puerto Ricans are capable of fixing things. So to the extent that you could employ people to build new roads and rebuild their farms and so forth, a system, they have already been doing that. Help them help themselves to a large degree. That was a solution, which the government refused to do only because there's so much money. We talked about this firm in Montana with two people employed in this firm actually succeeding at one point in getting a $300 million contract. You see, this is where the suffering comes in. It would have been a stroke of genius, even with all of the tragedy that existed. You have some men there who would happily have taken charge under supervision or instruction of what to do. Pay them a salary. Pay them to help rebuild their own communities. That, I think, would have been a splendid solution. Have the villagers do their thing that they've been doing all along. They're very communal in their living. In the things that they couldn't manage, like health services and so forth in the aftermath, they can't handle that. But there was much that, and still is, much that Puerto Ricans can handle themselves. If the materials were, look, they built their own houses. Most Puerto Ricans are living in homes they built themselves. Why this thing about only the government can rebuild? Wrong. The farms, they may need to have a tractor or they may need to have some equipment, but they have been farming for centuries. They're not novices at the business of life. So this is what happens. In the disaster, as I've said, there's a lot of money to be made. So they retard growth, they retard rebuilding, because they're saving these things as so-called projects, where Americans on the mainland will get the contracts to go to the, quote, island, unquote, to provide services at incredible amounts of money that we are essentially wasting. The solution has been so clear from the very beginning. Clean up the roads, that's a main project. That's a major project. But it's a major project that Puerto Ricans can do for themselves. So provide them, you know, you organize people into cadres that can get these jobs done to the extent that they can get done. Rebuilding is something they can do. I don't know why it's the government and others have succeeded in this myth of propagating the myth that these are helpless people. They're not. History is short. They've been feeding themselves. They've been building their own homes. They've been carrying on in their own businesses. They have been doing a lot without government, waiting for the government to do anything. That's not the history of Puerto Rico. So think about that. This could have been a very strong and excellent logical approach to helping Puerto Rico rebuild. The skills are there, and the expertise is already there. Why aren't they using what is readily available? So, no, Puerto Ricans don't need to come to the mainland. They have their land, which is being stolen. That's the point right now. I've reported on it. The land is being stolen. And it necessitates all kinds of myths to get these folks to believe that they're in such a weak position, they can't do anything to help themselves. They can't cook. All of a sudden, Puerto Ricans can't cook. You know, they don't need these boxes with Skittles in them. They need some food, and they're people who've been cooking for a long time. They can cook. They can take care of children. They can take care of the elderly. They don't have the facilities for sophisticated medical treatment and so forth right now. But there's so much Puerto Ricans can do right there, and they want to do it. They don't want to leave. But there is a plan in place that necessitates disabling them and keeping them dependent. Michael from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and your audience.
Thank you. Same here.
You know, one of my favorite quotes that I reflect on quite often is by Albert Einstein, and he said, clever people solve problems and wise people avoid them.
Now, you know, that's deep. That is very deep. I like that.
And I really do think about that a lot. And sometimes lately, when I think about it, it ties into the last phone call. I think about Puerto Rico. I said, you know, clever people solve problems. We're all clever. We're all problem solvers. We're conditioned to solve problems. But we're not wise enough to avoid them. Those people should be digging those lines, those transmission lines, under the ground. They should be putting all those people, giving them living wage jobs, really good jobs, putting the wires underground. And when you build structures, you make them like concrete structures that withstand
hurricane
hurricanes.
Yeah.
I mean, you avoid the problem. But, you know, in trying to solve the problem, you have these politicians come in between, and they're exploiters. They're giving out contracts, getting kickbacks, and all this stuff. So I think it makes a lot of sense to avoid problems. Hello?
I do, too. Yes, I do, too. I just talked about the fact that Puerto Ricans should be piloting the reconstruction of their own country.
Absolutely.
Of their own island. Absolutely.
Dig those things underground. Why do people have to be without food, electricity, and all this stuff? It's not necessary. If you avoid a problem, you see you're going to have a problem in 10 months, another hurricane or whatever, in 2 years, whatever it is. I mean, it's not if, it's when. So you dig those things underground, and you don't give it a chance for the storm to blow them down. Then everybody has a continuation of power. And you don't have this chaos and this massive amount of money wasted going into contractors' pockets. And then you're going to have the same thing, and they're going to be back making money again.
Yep.
So
and that's the way it is.
Goes.
It's the same in Puerto Rico as it is in Houston. You may recall that I talked about how is it possible that every time, and they know, I mean, the storm patterns have been established for thousands of years.
Okay. Correct.
We know that it's coming. We know the damage it will do. And yet, there is still water in people's houses.
That's right. They don't avoid the problem. They just, you know, they could just to redo what they did before, and they restore the whole old thing. They want to go back to the way things were. And you have to do something new, you know? So I think in ourselves, we have to, you know, we have to clean our own house and stand on our own, and not really follow anybody or we have to be sort of a light to ourselves when talking about self-knowledge and things like that. And there's a lot that goes into that. Like you say, you have to, the more you give to it, in moving on a path of self-knowledge, let's say, the more you get out of it. You really have to give it time. You have to make it your vocation to clear yourself. Because actually what we have, I think what people have to do is free themselves from society, because we can see every day in the news and everything that comes out, there are so many contradictions, there's so much hypocrisy around us, there's so much conflict, and it's because this is society, and So we have to, that's the environment that, that's a man-made environment. And we have to align ourselves with order, you know. You know, in the Greek, the word order is cosmos. And the cosmos is really an order. And you, if you look back in cultures, the longest lasting cultures, maybe were the Chinese dynasties that lasted over 1,000 years, 1,100 years. And they had sort of a cosmic culture. So things that are close to the cosmos, in the balance of nature and the balance of, it's order. It's a sense of order. But in ourselves, in our relationships, you know, something else has taken over. And so we have to free ourselves of that. And one of the principles of freeing ourselves is you really can't take time to do it. You have to devote time to this, as we said, but time itself is broken into two things. There's chronological time, which means it takes time to learn to play the piano, takes time to learn a language or something. But there's psychological time is destructive, I would say, because we can't solve our problems, human problems, problems of the self, with time. Because people can spend hours on the couch going, you know, on a psychiatrist's couch or something. You can spend years, you'll be at the end of your life and you still have these problems. So because we're taking time with them. I can remember in my own life, I was addicted to smoking cigarettes at one point early in my life, and I couldn't stop smoking cigarettes. And I was always quitting. I always said, told myself, I knew it was wrong. I knew I was hurting myself. So I said, I'm quitting. You know, I told myself, I told other people I was quitting smoking. As long as I was quitting, I was a smoker. One day, I had an epiphany, an enlightenment. I said, you know what? I don't have to quit smoking. I'm making an effort. I'm causing time within myself to quit smoking. At some time in the future, I'm going to quit smoking, or tomorrow, even if I say in the next minute, it's still time. But I eliminated time. I said, I don't have to quit smoking. I already quit. And that was my last cigarette. I never smoked again.
Well,
because
all right.
It was behind me. I didn't allow time psychologically into the picture. I eliminated time, and in eliminating time, I eliminated the problem.
Interesting.
So I think it's interesting for people to talk, to think about time, psychological time as an impediment to solving problems within themselves. And that's my contribution today.
A very good one indeed. Thank you, Michael, for calling in today.
Welcome.
Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Hello.
Yes, I'm hearing.
Hello? Hello?
Okay. Yes, are you hearing us?
Now I hear you, yes.
Okay.
There was some static. Yeah, I couldn't hear. Oh, wow. I just have to jump in first at the end of the last call because it's so pertinent now in terms of bad habits and addictions and things like that. Remember, we always, no matter how hard you think it is, whatever you're dealing with, whenever you go to sleep, you quit. So just anybody who's struggling with some type of addiction, whatever it is, substance, behavioral, whatever, remember, when you go to sleep, you quit. Every day is a new day. So you got those hours under your belt when you wake up. And that remember that. That's all. I'm not you. I'm just saying you plurally. But yeah, because I used to smoke too, and that, you know, it's interesting. Addiction is interesting. Anyway, it's just food for thought because it helps. Sometimes people need to know that they have a few hours under their belt when they're trying to quit something. I don't know, you know, some people are spiritual, some people aren't, but it seems like in terms of leadership and everything we're dealing with now in this country and worldwide, it really appears to me we're dealing with good against evil now. because, you know, we see ourselves mainly as the most powerful country in the world for certain reasons. And now we have a leader who is absolutely unhinged. And I could use a lot of adjectives, which I've done before. But, you know, this is where we find ourselves. And it may be a good thing. And it may lead into what you always are talking about, self-reliance and, you know, making your own decisions and doing things for yourself as much as you can. But, you know, we would not have gotten this far as Homo sapiens, as human beings. The reason we've come so far is because of communal living. And that's what's interesting. Whenever you go to any culture that doesn't deal with a lot of cities or, you know, just live out in the wilderness, people figure it out. There's a leader that will come to the top naturally. People take care of each other. And that's our natural proclivity as human beings. So we should remember that, I think. But I remember I spoke with you guys right after the tragedy in Puerto Rico, and I went on a little rant, and you asked me, well, what needs to be done now? And I said, well, there should have been ships there. You know, this is what the military does. That's what we do. That's our most powerful asset, really. That's a lot of our budget. And I didn't think about it at the time, but we are, the cabinet is full of generals. There's a lot of generals in the cabinet. They had to know. They had to know that hurricane was coming. They knew the hurricane was coming. And how they did not have a hospital ship, at least one, and ships at the ready, with pallets, with generators, chainsaws, fuel, food, to get up into the hinterlands, because in a lot of the Caribbean, the normal people, regular everyday folk, they live in the mountains and the hills, you know. And, you know, I just don't understand this, except for the fact that the leader of this current administration has made it clear through his lifetime that he does not care for people of color, blacks and Puerto Ricans in particular, which is why he and his father would not rent to blacks and Puerto Ricans. So we keep operating under this delusional rubric, like things are just going to suddenly change, and they're not. So at some point, we need to say no. We are not going to put up with this anymore. Just no. I think everything should stop. The government should stop. Everything should stop. And that will make these folks take notice.
How does that happen? That everything should stop.
Well, this is a capitalistic society, and you know nothing's generally wrong with capitalism, but unbridled capitalism is a problem. So don't spend any money if you can. Don't spend any money, and make it known. But it, you know, it has to be a movement. You can't just get out there and say something, and that you know there has to be. You have to have a critical mass behind you. But I think we have to start thinking along those terms, because things are out of control with the, like, sexual accusations. Now we are lambasting people in the media for accusations of sexual misconduct, which, you know, is not right. I'm not saying that the person's not guilty, but I'm saying we have a process, and that's what's supposed to separate us from other societies, and that we have a process. We were supposed to have a process, you know. So we have to get things are out of kilter. We have to get things back in order. And, and back to Puerto Rico, I did hear Gary, you know, right after the storm, I think he made a very good observation. He said, well, if we're going to rebuild in Puerto Rico, you know, go cutting edge, solar and wind. And I totally agree with that. And I totally agree with what you said. And I'm very familiar with the Caribbean culture. I mean, I have Trini friends, Jamaicans, you know, all over. And it's a different culture. And folks are not afraid I'm not saying we're afraid to work, but, you know, in the islands, people are used to working. They don't just want to sit around. You know, it's not looked well upon. You just don't do that. So, yes, like you said, you know, put people to work. But you have to get the supplies there, because who wants to leave their home? And it's interesting what the first caller, I think, who made it, I forget his name, from Florida. And he was commenting that maybe people should just forget about it, throw the towel in. But, you know, that is what the power elite want Puerto Ricans to do. Because, you see, and it happens, and I'm going to make this really quick, I'm going to try to, but you see, this is history. We've seen this before, you see. And I don't know where to start, juxtapose or just out front. So I'm just going to start out front. If you leave your land, you will not get your land back. Do not leave your property. I would say no. I would say no. I would say no to that. And if a person wants to use the argument, well, you know, it's not safe and the storm is going to come back and we're going to have to bail you out. Because it sounded financial to me. I mean, at the end of the day, that argument that a caller made, it intimated financial responsibility to me. That's what it sounded like. But I don't want to be asked to leave my home. But if you use that logic, then what about the folks who live in the Bible Belt, like Joplin, Missouri? They get hit by these terrible tornadoes every year, and the government subsidizes them every year. They rebuild. It almost happens like clockwork now. You know, Tornado Alley. Now, are we to say that those folks can't live in the plains anymore, or whatever topography you want to label that as? Is that what we do? No, we rebuild them. So
this must have been going on for centuries, and I don't know why. All of a sudden, well, we know why. We know why. Let's not kid ourselves. We know why.
We know why. I'm glad you used the kidding word. We need to stop kidding around now. These folks are playing for keeps. These folks are serious about their destruction. Look at the people we have in government now. Look at these people that this weirdo has appointed. Look at the comment he made yesterday to the Native Americans about Pocahontas. What is wrong with him?
He's mentally ill. I've said this.
He is mentally ill.
I said this from the outset.
Yes, you did.
There's something wrong with him. And it needs some kind of professional attention. But there's something wrong with this man. Even his own mother thought there was something wrong with him.
Oh, goodness.
She asked once, it was reported, you know, what is it with this child? Well, we have to leave it there. We've used up our time for today. I thank you all for calling and offering such incredible ideas and thoughts that we should strongly consider. This is what we need. We need to be talking to each other a lot more. Stay tuned right here at PRN.FM, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. Peter.